everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for July 2017. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by the myth, the legend, Tim Nelson.
I'm mythic.
Yes.
Does that mean you are not real?
Tim, I miss you so much.
I miss you too.
It's the truth.
It's been a while since we podcast.
Way too long.
It's been a long, miserable movie summer.
That's it. That's really the reason why. We took a look at June and said, it's not happening. Plus our schedules. Mixture of the two resulted in sadness for our listeners, and I'm very sad about that. For them, I can feel their tears from afar.
They sit there waiting.
They do.
At the end of each podcast, they start marking their calendars, counting the days. I did have somebody that said, you guys aren't as regular as you could be.
Right. Well, a lot of podcasts are once a week, some biweekly, but, you know, once a month are a little more rare. So we're already, you know, stretching the patience of our listeners. So to go another month without, we are sorry from the bottom of our hearts.
Don't ever question our regularity. That's what I'm saying.
Yes. But we're going to make it up to you as we always do. You know we take care of you, dear listeners. So we had to take June off, but you know what that means. You're getting not one, but two podcasts for July. Two for the price of one.
Yeah, it's a deal.
Yes.
I would buy it. I would definitely stock up.
Absolutely. So today we are going to review the summer classic Baby Driver.
Classic?
Well.
It's a brand new film, man.
Sorry. And in 2 weeks, yes, 2 weeks, we are back again for the long-awaited Dunkirk.
There might be one good movie this year.
Yeah.
It's
been a bummer of a year.
I'm not talking about Baby Driver yet, but it's been a rough summer.
Compared to last year, I would consider this a pretty off year for cinema. Yes, absolutely. All right, but first, Tim, I have to give a shout out to one of our listeners for a moment. Now, some of you have been writing reviews on Apple Podcasts for us. I know that I say this at the end of the show, and everyone says this, right? This is a podcast staple. At the end, someone always throws in, would you please rate and review us on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app? And it gets annoying. You get numb to it. But the problem is that is the way Apple's made the system. We can't control it. It's just the way. If you, the more reviews, the more people find us, and we appear in search results. So thank you so much for everyone who has been reviewing us. And I would like to start doing personal shout outs to the people who take the time. It only takes about 60 seconds. That's no lie. Do a 5-star review and a review for us. Here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is a shout out to, what's her name? It might not be a her. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm
goodness.
Losing it. I've got to find it.
We are trying to shout out to you right now. We don't know.
Here it is. I found it. I'm all sorry. Right. J.Q. Lindsay.
J.Q. Lindsay.
J.Q. Lindsay. Could be a man or woman. We don't know.
We don't know.
The point is, what we know
really
is...
It doesn't really matter, does it?
It doesn't.
No.
The point is that kind person left us a review, and here's what it says, Tim Nelson. Thoughtful and entertaining. I love watching movies, talking about movies, and listening to good commentary on movies, and this podcast hits the spot.
Dang, man.
Wow.
Wow.
Music to our ears. J.Q. Lindsay, thank you so much for taking the time to do that. You have no idea how much that helps us.
That's actually my mom's pen name.
Is it? No, it very well could be.
No, I'm just joking. I don't know. Cool, man. That's encouraging.
Do you have any words of wisdom for J.Q. Lindsay that they can take on their
You've
way?
You've got terrible taste. No, sure. No. Thanks for listening. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
We have fun doing it, and you know, we hope somebody's listening, and some people are, so that's cool.
They are.
Thank you.
So please continue to leave reviews. It takes no time at all, and you will get a shout out from Tim and I. So there you go. All right, Tim, we can delay no further. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Baby Driver.
I'm ready.
Here we go.
Let's do it.
I saw this a couple days ago, and it was one of those moments where I was struck by the feeling of the movie theater. You know, I'm a huge like movie theater fan, like just the actual act of going to a movie theater to see a movie.
Yeah.
Yes. And some people mock me because I go by myself frequently. It's mostly because I have 3 kids and my wife's like, you know, just go. We're not.
Because it would cost $1,700.
That's exactly
to
right.
To go to a movie at night with three.
You throw
kids.
In popcorn, it's basically, yeah. it's bankruptcy. Yeah.
Got you.
But So, but I just love it, man. Everything about it. Driving to the movie, listening to tunes on the way there, kind of building up the anticipation, walking in there, getting the popcorn. Always get the kids combo. That's a PSA to our listeners. Get the kids combo. They don't care if you don't have a kid.
They don't care if you aren't a kid.
They don't care. It's $5.50 in most places, and you get a popcorn, you get a soda, you get a little candy. All right? That's called cheating the system, and it works. Every time.
All right.
Anyway.
Or go on Tuesday and get your club card.
Tuesday. Yes. If you happen to be in the local theater chain around here on Tuesdays, if you're a awards member, it's $5 all day. Wowzers. I can't say their name because we're hoping to get them as a sponsor soon, but then we will. Then we
that's
will.
That's how we're going to work it.
Anyway.
We didn't talk about your name. We could. But
we could.
Yeah, you haven't sent us free pens yet.
We could have mentioned you 10 times by now, but,
that's,
you know,
right,
sorry.
Right.
So but anyway, I had that feeling. So I was, you know, placing my soda in the holder, and I was just looking around, and the people were coming in, and I was just reminded, this is what it's all about, man. So thankful to get to watch movies and talk about them. And there's something about the summer that really brings it home, you know, kind of stepping out of the 90-degree weather out there and going into that air-conditioned theater. I love the movie theater experience. So that's what Baby Driver reminded me of. And the movie itself has kind of that summer feel to it. Would you say?
Yeah, car chase movie, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Exactly. So, Tim, when did you see this one?
I went on a date.
You did?
Yeah. I took my beautiful wife and I went on a date.
Wonderful.
Which happens like every 2 years. And we went and we saw this movie together at the mall. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Did you guys have different opinions about the movie? You don't have to say what your opinion is yet.
She didn't like it.
Okay.
Yeah. And not like she wasn't anti it. It just wasn't her thing. And sure. I was like, hey, this guy, great reviews.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Let's go see this thing. Well, I mean, what else were we going to see?
There's really nothing else right now.
No.
Right at this second. Well, there's Spider-Man Homecoming, which is, I'm hearing good things about that. But, you know, you and superhero movies.
Who you've been talking to, like middle schoolers?
Take that, Dan Baker. Dan right. really liked it.
So that's good.
He said it was one of the better ones
but
of the MC
like
universe.
Like, yeah, okay, great. But if you're like not into that, I'm not going to be like,
right.
hey, hon, you want to go to Spider-Man? I'll take you out of Spider-Man.
I will say, even I was just thinking about this the other day, even as someone who genuinely loves superhero movies, there's kind of is a point where it's just like, I know what I'm getting in that package, and can you just please give me something different?
Right.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, it's like a minivan. It's like, it's going to work for a lot of things, okay? But it's like, you don't want to go on a date in one.
Uh-huh. It's reliable.
You can probably haul a boat.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's safe. It's reliable. But, you know, sometimes just give me something exciting, right?
Right. Yeah. You want to go out. You need a sport coupe. You know what I mean? Yeah.
All right. So let's describe the film up front for our listeners. Some of you might not have seen it. We understand. It's okay. You need a little backdrop. So here you go. Baby Driver. I'll do my best to explain. I always like to defer to, I always want to defer to Tim on this, but he says I've got to handle the synopsis, so that's okay.
I don't know about chronology on anything.
It's fine. By the way, can we mention, we forgot to mention, we podcast out of Tim's home, and it's summer right now in the Midwest, and it is a blazing hot summer day, and Tim does not have central air, so I don't know if you can, at any point, we'll be able to pick up on some droopiness or some sweat kind of gliding into the microphone, but it is blazing hot in this house right now. So please, I don't know what you'll hear, but that's that, just so you can have a sense of what we're feeling.
It's like we're in like a drug house in Houston right now.
Yes.
Yeah, with no AC. It's a little drippy.
It's drippy. Anyway, that was
an
aside.
No offense to Houston. I like Houston.
No, Houston's great. Okay, so Baby Driver. Baby Driver is about this young guy. I think maybe he's in his 20s. They didn't really establish. Would you say 20s?
Yeah.
All right. And his name is Baby. That's his name. Baby. Get over it. Okay?
It's not his real name.
It's not his real name. But that's what everyone calls him. And that's what he goes by. And he is a getaway driver for bank robbers. The first time we see him, that's what he's doing. He's good at his job. No one outraces the cops like Baby. All right? He also loves music. Always listening to music. When he's on the go, whatever he's doing, grabbing a cup of coffee, he is dancing to music. I mean, this guy loves it. He doesn't just listen to it. He is in the music, all right? And he can't drive without it. So Anyway, there are deeper reasons why he is this getaway driver and that the movie gets into, but we learn that part of the reason why he's doing this is to pay off this very bad guy, played by Kevin Spacey, who he stole from once when he was young, not knowing the value of what he was stealing. And so he's involved in this operation, and he's basically wants to pay this guy off so he can get on his way. And of course he does, but Kevin Spacey isn't quite willing to let him go, and Baby gets stuck in this situation where the people he loves most, including his deaf foster father, this new girlfriend that he has acquired, are all suddenly in jeopardy, and what will he do? That is the plot of Baby Driver. All right, you have anything to add to that?
No,
oh, I think it's
good. He likes sunglasses.
Oh, yes. He has multiple pairs of sunglasses on at all times, to the point where there's one amazing scene where this guy's getting all upset at him and he keeps ripping off glasses and he just keeps pulling out a new pair. Also, we mentioned his love for music, but this guy has like 20 iPods for any occasion that strikes him. So he's always pulling out a new iPod and a new pair of sunglasses. Yeah, there you go.
So he's an isolated dude.
Yes.
Even though he lives with somebody, he's a pretty isolated dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. So when you walk away from Baby Driver, though, the plot isn't really the first thing that comes to your mind. It's more about the style of this film. So, Tim, how would you describe Baby Driver's aesthetic, the style we got going on here?
It's like cross-genre. So, like, it's a your typical heist chase film.
Mm-hmm. Like Heat, kind of.
But it's been injected with a little comedy.
Ah.
And then it's a little oddball, too. So I'd say it's got... I mean, the guy did Shaun of the Dead, right?
Yes. That was his, major... Yes, claim
which when I first saw that, I was like, how could this even exist? This is the greatest film I've ever seen.
It was wonderful. Yeah. I remember seeing that in theater. It was like a best kept secret at the time. You're like, how did this get made? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this has elements of that. Also, Scott Pilgrim versus the World or whatever.
He did.
There's these elements of like that most unlikely person could be the person that is at the center of the narrative. So that's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And it's also just like we talked about with one of the other breakout hits that wasn't expected to do that great, which was, now I'm forgetting the name, Get Out.
Yes.
So this had some similarities to Get Out to me. It's like, well, it's like, that's like comedy, horror, social commentary. And this would be like heist movie, comedy, and then kind of absurdist. So it's actually making fun of some of the things that are the typical chase heist stuff, but also paying homage to some of it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very intelligent film.
And the whole thing feels like one extended car chase. It has an energy about it, right? Like it's a very smoothly directed film by Edgar Wright, who did Shaun of the Dead. It's just the scenes flow into each other with this kind of frenetic energy, but it doesn't ever feel like it's too much, like it's too in your face. Like sometimes, you know, I was thinking that movie like Crank with Jason Statham. You know, there's some movies that go for energy and it's just obnoxious. This movie has a lot of energy. You're never bored, but it's a very smooth ride, mm-hmm. is how I would describe it. Yeah, and the music, man, the music is a character all to itself. Props to the soundtrack, right?
And the mix.
The mix.
How high they mix some of this stuff is like, I mean, the idea, he's wearing the headphones, right? So like, everything's getting drowned out.
Yeah.
So the mix is so heavy in some of these scenes, it's like we're be wearing the headphones.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of cool.
Someone will pop out one half of the headphones and we'll hear that, yep. and then it'll put them back in, yep. and it's full volume. You're absolutely right. Props to the sound mixing. Yeah. You know what? Sound mixing is one of those categories in the Oscars where you're like, I have no idea how I would even begin to vote for it.
Now
this is one.
Someone, I don't know who it is.
Please nominate this movie.
I'll go to your IMDb and find out who it is.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Bro, they mixed the sound real heavy. You couldn't hear the dialogue. That's beautiful.
It's a great soundtrack. We were just rocking the soundtrack to get in the mood for the podcast. It's seriously true. I didn't recognize, I don't think, any song in the movie, but I loved every song. It's that kind of a soundtrack. He didn't go for the greatest hits. You know, I was watching Kong Skull Island. Ugh, don't watch that movie, by the way. That was terrible. That was a summer failure.
Watching that movie.
no date night on the for that
Kong
one.
Kong Skull Island. No, that's like my father-in-law might go see that after Hobo with a Shotgun.
It was It was so bad, Tim. But the soundtrack was literally every song has been playing in movies since like the 60s. Like, it's the same top hits that you've seen in every movie ever made, and it was so like cliche the whole time. But this is like different. It's like every song works, but I want to know who that artist is because I've never heard of that song or that artist before. It was wonderful. So Edgar Wright knows his music. He says he still owns an iPod. I heard that in an interview.
Oh, that's cool.
There you go.
And the character, the main character, Baby, has multiple iPods for different days and moods and all this other stuff. That's pretty cool. I like the soundtrack because it it actually has a lot of, it has stuff that's like 70s period stuff, then it has more recent, some 90s. But it's not, yeah, it's nothing that you're going, you might recognize some of these. Like, I recognize some of them.
Okay.
And, but it's not going to be one of these things where like, you feel like, oh, I'm so tired of that.
Exactly.
This is exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Or really, this will be an everlasting love again, because this song needs to end. You know, or yeah, anything that in the movie Love Actually is a song. No, that's not gonna happen. Or The Big Chill. Like, these are songs that you will not necessarily recognize. And if you recognize the whole soundtrack, you're a real music junkie.
Yeah, even if you know the band. Like, I was talking to this guy earlier today, and he was like, there was a Queen song that he hadn't heard before, you know, and he loves Queen. And so, yeah, it was great. It's pulling from the
Focus. We were just listening to Focus, which is like this bizarre, I don't know, like from the Netherlands or something. There's some weird
they 70s, literally yodel.
They yodel and they like play, they rip on guitar. Yeah. YouTube it. I forgot the name of the song, sorry guys. You can go and look at the soundtrack. But like, I got introduced to that by like a guy that was like a saxophone major that was a music teacher for, and he grew up in the 70s. Like, dude, I didn't even know this existed. He sent that to me 2 years ago. And then it's in the soundtrack now, and I was like, whoa, this guy's finding weird stuff, kind of obscure stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's pretty fun.
So let's talk a little more about Edgar Wright. Now, he's most known for his Blood and Ice Cream trilogy. That's what they call those three movies. It was Shaun of the Dead, which was, I still think, the best of the three for sure. And that was like the first major film that I remember seeing Edgar Wright in. But all of his the films in this trilogy, there's Shaun of the Dead, there's Hot Fuzz, and then what is it? The World's End is the third one. And they're all kind of like sort of a spoof on genre films. So the first one would be a zombie. Second one's police dramas. And then the third one's like alien movies. And spoof is kind of the wrong word. It's more like a homage to it.
It's an injection of a new idea into a really kind of played out.
But you can tell they love the genres, each one.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's a great director. Like, I've enjoyed pretty much everything he's done. I never saw, what was that one you mentioned with Michael Cera? Scott Pilgrim. Did you see that?
Yeah, but it wasn't that memorable to me. It didn't do well at the box office. Some people liked it, some people didn't.
But yeah, he was a good director on those, but I thought that this is the best film I've seen that he's directed. I feel like he is really, it's just the way he's in control from the first frame, like, is really evident in this one. And like I said, the flow, the mise-en-scene, this movie moves, and he is intentional in every shot. What do you think of him as a director in this?
Yeah, I know that a lot of the critics were talking about good direction, but I also like that he was going above and beyond. Like, he was syncing the gunshots with the music. So like, when it would hit a beat, they would shoot a gun, and like, it was like just attention to detail.
Yep.
And then also the editing was considered like some of the best editing of the year so far. So from a technical standpoint, I guess that's not necessarily directing, but he does have the final say, right?
The director's in charge of every little nook and cranny. Yeah, exactly.
So from that standpoint, this seems like well done. And then it alludes to all. I mean, this film is in a long line of films, and it's paying tribute to so many different films.
Yes.
And different. I feel like he's in the, you know, one of the people that most respect him is Tarantino. I know we mention Tarantino like every podcast because we just like him. We're dudes. I'm from the 90s, so of course I'm going to say it. But the idea of them is that they have a deep respect for the older stuff and that they pay tribute to it. Coen Brothers, same way. Everybody, you pick it and you pay tribute in your film by reinterpreting the older stuff.
And music's a huge part of all of those directors' works. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just talking with a guy about Death Proof, Tarantino's big grindhouse car chase movie, which I think Edgar Wright said was an inspiration for this film. Mm-hmm. And that is it's kind of an underrated Tarantino movie. I think, like, if you get the extended edition, Kurt Russell is this crazy stunt driver, stuntman Mike, I think. It's pretty awesome. So yeah, I think you're right. There's that's good similarities there, and these definitely, you can feel the influences. And it's really the tone. It's tone, I think, is one of the most intangible elements of a movie, because it's easy to say it didn't feel right, but it's a lot harder, I think, to direct it. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, having a consistent tone when you're basically shooting out of order and everything. But that's what's impressive, is like everything feels tight and tone wise, but it also has a nice mix of humor and action and suspense, and it never feels like it's jumping or jarring from one thing to the next. It's very smooth. All right, man. Let's talk about the characters and some of the acting going on here. So, man, let's talk about Baby. Now, I think we were briefly talking before we started recording, and you instantly said that you didn't like Baby, and he's the main character. So explain your thoughts on Baby.
Oh, he just seems like a self-centered dude. And as much as, like, okay, so he has tinnitus. Like, he basically is isolated, and I think this is actually within, there's a reason for this, because this film is within a genre that needs that character. So, which is, it's like basically twice removed from a French Italian movie called Le Samurai, I think. Say, anyway, this is like an old movie, go rent it. I watched it before we did this. But the idea is, like, he is a samurai. He's a modern day samurai, is what Baby is. He's like Ronin. So he's got a master, and the master can control what he does, and he can make him do unethical things, but he has to have allegiance to that master. But in a lot of ways, he has to be detached and isolated. And so the way he does that is sunglasses, headphones, and he doesn't talk to the outside world. And he's not like he's unhappy necessarily, but he is a detached, isolated character, and he works basically because he's either obligated to the master or because he is doing something that is self-centered. So, like, as much as he's, like, cool, right? Like, he's kind of a cool... He's a character that I go, ooh, that guy's kind of with it, right? Or he's kind of mysterious. He's kind of a jerk.
But in a sense, that's kind of like a classic protagonist trope, right? If you think of, like, Clint Eastwood, Indiana Jones, right? They're kind of doing their own thing. They're kind of in their head, and you can tag along. But at the end of the day, it's about them, right? And it's about what they want and need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that character, the idea of this, like, the samurai character is really critical to this role.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there would be some level of isolation.
But you're saying he's kind of unlikable.
The way we like him, like, this is the redeeming part. The way we like him is through the foster dad.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
The only way that he becomes likable is that he is caring for this person, but he doesn't listen to that person. He doesn't.
That's true. He is a deaf foster dad who is very dependent on him to make him food and get him the things he needs. But you're right. Even in that relationship, there's kind of a self-centeredness to that. It's like he just sort of literally dances through the living room and kind of puts on the music that he wants. And yeah, you're right. I was put off by the character at first because he was so... what's the word? Just the way that he would listen to music and then, like, you know, dance all around his car, the way that when he had the coffee in his hand and he was, like, doing twirls on the sidewalk, it was a little bit too much at first, but then you kind of settle in and you understand what he's all about.
But that's good. I think this gets into the absurdist part of it, because one of your guys reading was saying it's like Pulp Fiction meets La La Land. And the idea is that that character, that Clint Eastwood character, right, would never dance with coffee. or the zombie killer would never be like an overweight dude that's hanging at a pub.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's just not happening.
Right.
So I think that's very intentional. Mm-hmm. Like these weird scenes where it's like kind of almost like an episode of Glee happened just there.
That's it.
And the dude's a dancer. I mean, that's like he has a dance background.
I didn't know that.
So it's like, either he casts to that, which is likely, highly likely. There's not like, 8 lines for this guy.
Yeah, right.
But I think, you know, I think that's important. And then he needed a baby face, which he has.
But it's good acting. I mean, the guy's name is Ansel Elgort. Probably butchering that. But he hasn't done a lot. I've never seen him in anything. Apparently he was in the Fault in Our Stars, which is kind of one of those teen, young adult things. And
werewolves?
No, this one was some love thing, young adult love romance thing. And then there was Vampires, like the Divergent and series. So I've never seen him in anything, but I thought
he was in Divergent?
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, really? Why?
It was on Netflix, and I think of Netflix as free, as you know.
You threw it on? Divergent. There's so many things to watch on Netflix, and you chose Divergent.
I didn't know like a 14-year-old kid wrote that. Anyway. I looked it up, and I was like, oh, shame on me.
Okay, so I'm saying he does the character justice, and once you kind of settle into his groove, I think because it's one of those characters that you don't have a lot of lines, so you have to communicate a lot in a very kind of stoic character face. And I think as we get to know him and kind of layers get revealed upon layers, he turns into a pretty good performance.
He's not a character. You know what he is? He's like a wall, and everybody else is a rubber ball. And you throw the rubber ball as hard as you can against it.
But you think he's just like catalyst for everyone else?
Oh yeah. Like, what does he do? Nothing. He does nothing. He drives the car and just sits there.
I don't know. As he becomes more morally conflicted about his role, and as you see him against the backdrop of the, you don't think so?
I don't know. Maybe. All right. Maybe I could be wrong. I just didn't think of him as being like a captivating character.
Yeah.
So rather than like, he's not just unlikable. He's just kind of like, I don't know. I think he's the most likable when right after the first chase scene, and he's super likable because there's so much mystery, because you don't know anything about him. Mm-hmm. And the more you get to know him, the more boring he is.
Oh, I think the more you get to know him, the more deeper it gets. No. Having said that, I don't...
What's his special thing he does? He, like, records some stuff and makes, like, bad hip-hop.
That's interesting. Have you ever seen that before? That's interesting.
Yeah, sure.
No, it's you haven't.
Like, he's, like, sampling everyday life and making, like, bad hip-hop out of it. Come on.
I didn't love the use of flashbacks to get to know his character more. This is kind of the bad use of flashbacks, in my opinion. It's kind of the lazy screenwriter tool. You know, we've talked about flashbacks before. Where you have to do something different. You can't just stop the movie.
Like,
maybe I don't. But you can't just stop the movie and go to a flashback to explain something. You have to find a way to explain things while keeping the plot going. Like, Manchester by the Sea worked because you did something different. You had the time. It was ping-ponging back and forth between the past and the present.
Yeah,
right?
That.
So I feel like just halting everything to explain a character is lazy, but you know, maybe it's just me.
I think they did the same thing that you do in your superhero movies.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
It's like, it was like in the moment where Auntie whatever got killed, it was the moment he needed to get revenge on so and so.
It's
but
true.
I think the girlfriend in the film is that reminder of the event all the time. So they didn't need to like do the. I think they did the flashback twice or maybe three times.
Maybe three times. Yeah,
it was just really emphatic, and I think that the presence of the girlfriend who's fitting into, or the waitress is fitting into all of his mom categories, which you're like, geez, this is a little weird. That reminded you all the time that was, you know, present before him. And then his tinnitus reminds you all the time. So I don't know why you need like a million flashbacks. I don't know if that maybe
it was a little overdone.
Part of me thinks they're poking fun of that.
At flashbacks?
At that, yeah.
At the trope. Well, that would fit in with the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy for sure, though this film had a much different tone than those. But, yeah. But you're right. He meets his girlfriend. He meets this girl at a diner where his mom used to work. And there's in the flashbacks, there's a deep connection with his mom. And that's where he got this hum in the drum, as Kevin Spacey says, which is what his need for music comes from. But yeah, well, let's talk about Kevin Spacey. Well, are you a fan of Kevin Spacey? What do you feel about him? People seem kind of mixed about this guy.
I like him, but he doesn't have range.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He's good at what he does. Like, it's very rare where you're like, oh, it was bad something, acting or a bad character. But you're right. He pretty much plays the same sort of thing.
He plays the disaffected middle-aged guy really well.
Yeah,
he's an older guy.
Yeah,
but he plays a cynical know-it-all who is just sitting there watching another character make the wrong moves.
Yeah. While he stands there placid.
And he's like, yeah. Yeah. And like, so I think he was a good casting show. I don't know if he was the first one. I think they were going for Michael Douglas, actually.
Really?
Yeah. In the first choice. And there was even, what's her name? Best actress last year.
Emma Stone.
Emma Stone. Yeah. I didn't think about Emma Stone. I was like, what role
for
is that?
For Deborah?
I know. That'd be poor. It's already that character's already syrupy as it is.
Yeah,
Put gigantic eyes on her, and then what?
Just get Ryan Gosling for Baby, and let's do La La Land too.
Oh please! Oh my gosh, Baby! Ryan Gosling's like 100 years old.
that's true. Sorry. Oh my gosh, Blade Runner! Can we talk about how excited we are for Blade Runner?
I do like Blade Runner. We'll see what this what turns out here.
I'm excited.
I'm excited.
Go watch the trailer for Blade Runner 2049. You can't not be excited for the style.
I saw it. It's good.
Yeah. Anyway. Kevin Spacey, I like House of Cards, you know, and he plays this sort of underlying menace really well, where on the surface, you know, he might have a smile going and he might be able to say the right thing, but there's always this underneath, there's something bubbling that's cynical and sarcastic, and yeah, it's good. But yeah, he plays the character well. There is a point where I feel like the character becomes something unnatural that I will get to later. But yeah, overall, good. And then, so in the movie, Kevin Spacey plays this kind of like the ringleader of these heists. He always has a new crew, and he's sort of the guy in a suit who bankrolls these operations. He's the mastermind behind it, but he doesn't get his hands dirty. He kind of sends the grunts out to go do the actual, you know, dangerous part.
He's an ideator. He doesn't do execution.
Oh, is that a word? Ideator?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
It's a business term.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, so that's what he does. His name's Doc, by the way. And so he mix matches these crews, and that's where we get to know a couple other characters. Two of note for me was John Hamm from Mad Men. He plays this guy named Buddy. I like John Hamm. Do you not like John Hamm?
Jeez. I like John Hamm.
Okay.
Not in this role.
You didn't like this character.
He's too old for this role.
Mm.
I hate to tell you, Johnny. I mean, he's got this like young dude's hairdo, and like he's this, like, it's just like gray and through, and like I'm like, I feel like John Hamm could have played the Kevin Spacey character.
Oh sure,
easily,
yeah.
Especially like, you know, watch Mad Men, right? He is playing the Kevin Spacey character in some ways in Mad Men. I thought like John Hamm was like a really bad casting choice. I know he's a big name, and people will show up for John Hamm.
Yep.
But I didn't think he was that great of a casting choice. He's just too old to play Jesse James, and that's what he's playing.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to have a younger person play that.
You're right. He's got his girlfriend named Darling, and right, they're supposed to be this sort of Bonnie and Clyde, Jesse James type thing, and he does seem a bit old for it, and I don't like where they took his character. Again, we'll get to that in a bit, but I do like him as an actor.
I totally agree. I think he was miscast.
Sure. That's fair. It's not his fault.
It's somebody else made the wrong choice. It might have been good for the movie. I don't know.
But Jamie Foxx, I think Jamie Foxx was a perfect casting choice, and I really liked him in this. I don't typically love Jamie Foxx, but I thought this was great because he just so Jamie Foxx plays this guy named Bats, who's this sort of bat bleep crazy guy, right? That is true to his name.
He's kind of nuts.
Yeah, he's unhinged, he's dangerous, he's vile, irrational. This is a guy who basically like gets something in his head and he'll flip out. And I think Jamie Foxx played that really well, and I enjoyed the character. What did you think? Do you think he was miscast here, or were you down with him?
No, I mean, he's fine. I don't have a problem with
not
Jamie.
Impressed.
I didn't think this character was very hard to play.
Really?
No.
Yeah, I guess.
Because it's like so...
But it's fun.
It wasn't like, because he is crazy, and he's a psychopath is what he is.
That's what he is, exactly.
But he didn't like play that role. I mean, there's elements of like where he was a little bit chess master, where he could anticipate stuff and he caught some things other people didn't catch. But I didn't feel like he was played that. I didn't feel like he played that character quite smart enough.
Okay.
And I think that if he showed a little bit, and this is the writing, it's not really his character, but I think the character's a little boring. It was a totally predictable character.
And there were moments where they tried, like in the diner scene, where they tried to give him a little extra something, but they could have used more of that. I would agree.
Yeah, and then like how much, like his reactions to things didn't seem, I guess he's crazy, but like his reactions to things didn't seem like consistent with his character.
Mm.
So like if somebody grabbed his gun, which happens in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't think he's just going to like let that go.
Not just going to brush it off.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's some problems there.
I think you're right. And I think that's a trend too, is the characters not being entirely consistent with what they set out at the beginning is a problem that plagues the movie, which I want to get to. In fact, why don't we just go there? I want to talk about some of the third act problems that I ran into. I thought pretty much that this was a perfect film up until a certain point, up until about the beginning of the third act, kind of right at the end of the ordeal. That's where I started running into problems. So let me just get into it. Now I'm going to throw a spoiler alert here because we're going to get into some of the nitty gritty of some of the details that happen at the end. So if you haven't seen Baby Driver, out of respect for the filmmakers, stop here and then go see it and come back because we're going to be getting into some of the details here. But basically, okay, so I feel like everything's going along well, and the movie is just like the cruises for like an hour 20 minutes, perfection. It's smooth, effortless. Where things took a turn for me is at the moment where they have the heist of the post office. That's where, and Baby Driver kills bats. I think that's where things took a wrong turn, because once,
no pun intended,
yeah. Once Baby, so far he's been kind of looking at this world through the glass, literally, through the glass of the car, through the glass of the bank windows, and he's sort of, you know, on the outside looking in. But once he takes that turn, then everything goes off the rails, because now he's literally the one that is, you know, holding up cars and stealing things, and he's killed someone, and I think that's where everything starts to turn. And then you have that scene where Baby's about to go get Deborah, and he walks into a diner, and you know someone's going to be there to stop him. And I think that the person who should have been there is Kevin Spacey and not John Hamm. I think they made a mistake with having John Hamm be there, and from then on it comes into this, you go into this thing where John Hamm becomes the one that's chasing them around. I think he should have died in the fight with his girlfriend, and Kevin Spacey should have been there.
So the spoiler, but what do you do, like, because the scene where Kevin Spacey like just does a turnaround,
that's what I'm saying, that you, then you like would have that, avoided so that I hated that. I thought that was so inconsistent for that character. You're talking about a guy who basically drags his kid into this world because he says, you know, I'll basically kill everyone you love and, you know, destroy your girlfriend. And then all of a sudden he sees them that they're in love and he wants to help them and he's willing to even die for them. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but I think this is where he's screwing with you. Like when they case the post office with that little kid.
Yeah.
That's like exactly like you're screwing with you. Do you understand?
Uh-huh.
Like the idea being like that anyone would like let a little kid that's related to them go case a major like robbery.
You're saying like, a lot of this is tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's like poking fun, right?
Uh-huh. Maybe.
It's like, you know, beating zombies up in the bar.
See,
But
I struggle with that because I feel like you have to walk a line. You can't really have your cake and eat it too, right? Like Shaun of the Dead is much more clearly a spoof. It's clearly crossing the line into absurdist territory, and I feel like this movie...
But don't you also feel the tension in Shaun of the Dead? Don't you feel like, that zombie's gonna get you, dude? That
you're right.
Zombie's gonna get you, dude. And the zombies do get people in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Dude, that really gross scene where that guy dies at the end, and it's really disturbing. Yeah.
So, like, I feel like he has enough tension. Mm-hmm. This is what's like...
This is kind of right in the nutshell, yeah.
Right, so he's got enough tension to get you, like, really in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like you want this guy to fit into whatever your thing you want him to fit into is. And then he like cashes in the, well, this is absurd, here you go. And then he like throws something in there that just wouldn't fly.
Yeah.
It's just something bizarre.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of his style.
But
which is fun.
Here's the thing. all of the when you change his character to get his hands dirty and to get blood on his hands, that inevitably leads you for him to have to face the music, which leads you to him having to go to jail at the end, which, by the way, is the most uncinematic ending to a movie. And I've seen this in multiple movies. Anytime your character has to do time in jail and you do a jail montage and that's your ending, you've screwed up. Especially if your movie is a car chase movie and you're not ending it with a car chase. You've done something wrong. And he credits Death Proof as one of his influences. That movie ends with the most epic car chase, and just, it's like you want to stand up and cheer after that movie because it is so perfect. And then this one ends in the most just anticlimactic, uncinematic fashion ever. And I feel like it's because they had that change with the character. This is my idea of how the third act should have gone. I feel like they should have, so you have, you know, Kevin Spacey show up in the diner and he won't let them out, but somehow Baby doesn't get his hands dirty. He doesn't kill someone, and he's able to kind of let evil turn on evil, right? They kill each other, and he's able to sail off in an epic car chase with his girl into the sunset. Now, that's how you end a movie like this. You don't end with a jail montage. I did not like the last, I would say, 25 minutes.
With you, man.
No, come on.
Like, you've got expectations for these heist movies.
Because he built it up.
He's messing with you.
So you thought it worked fine.
Do I want resolution on something that's like a joke? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I guess you want resolution on a joke, but I guess if this is him playing around and he's having fun with this, do I need to have resolution for every character? Do I need to have it work out according to like what the story, how the story, the genre would normally work out?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is like it's a Western in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the final score, and then it's like bank robbers, literally, right? So we'll hit this. This will be the last score, and then
one last job,
and then we'll have enough to like live on forever, and we can go out west, which is exactly what they do, right? Right in the sunset, but that's not real life. That's fantasy. The whole thing is, and there's ideas of freedom and all this stuff, but this movie is not. It doesn't set us up to take it seriously.
Yeah, even from the moment that we first see Baby and he's dancing around in his car, you're right. There is that element that's in everything that Wright does. I think it's a good point. I just feel like you have to stay true to what works as a movie. And
okay,
you know.
So I think he's playing with that idea,
just turning it on its head to mess with us.
Yeah, and I don't know like his intent on the third. I know that bears any resemblance to the other movie I was referring to, The Samurai, that the ending being an ending that you didn't expect and that the protagonist doesn't win is actually what happens in that movie.
There you go.
Kind of what happens here. His fantasy is still there, intact. His freedom fantasy is still intact, right? Because that's the actual last scene of the movie.
Right.
And so the idea is almost like, well, if your fantasy is intact, then it doesn't matter where you are, because I mean, really, like that relationship was like totally based on obsession with his past and a fantasy. It wasn't based on like them actually knowing or caring about each other or any of this stuff. They barely know each other. So
the fantasy way to end would be that typical adrenaline shot, literally outrunning the cops and going off, and then Wright is saying, yeah, but that's not true to life. But see, you're trying to have your K too. You're saying it's all a joke, and then you're like, yeah, but he's just staying true to real life.
Well, I don't know about staying true to real life. I'd say he's just giving you an alternative ending that maybe you wouldn't normally have.
Which isn't great.
Well, it's not what you want.
But he
keeps you in the fantasy that they'll be together one day and they'll have the freedom and they'll be in a car they can't afford, right?
Going to 80. I guess.
Being on 80, Highway 80.
And Baby Driver 2 has been mentioned. So there you go.
Atlanta. Why Atlanta? I don't know. Somebody will tell me.
All right. Fair enough. So let's talk about some of the thematic dimensions. Did you get anything thematically?
So
Reverend Tim?
I went into this like going, okay, tinnitus. Okay, so he's always can't quite hear, and he's wearing shades, so he can't quite see. And I wanted to get philosophical, and like, then I gave up because this movie is a car chase movie. Okay. And then I wanted to go psychological. And I was like, oh, is this psychological? He's basically, his whole life is a response to the trauma of his past. And then I was like, no, this is a car chase heist movie.
Yeah.
So I went down a few of the rabbit trails and I was like, no, that's not what this is. This is a car chase heist movie that is witty and fun.
You're right. Anything that you throw on that has deep meaning would be a bit of a stretch in this film.
Yeah, you could, if you really want to go there, you can. But I don't think that the authorial intent on this in this case mm-hmm. is going to be there.
The only thing I could come up with was this idea of sort of like evil and sin, kind of like, you know, thinking that you can sort of just be on the outskirts of it, kind of play around with it, you know, like that, like in Proverbs where it says, can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned, right? You kind of get that sense where he feels like he can sort of skate on the outskirts of this, but in the end, he, as is true to life, he gets sucked in and it ends up almost destroying him. And I think that's, I mean,
that's
pretty,
a device, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's used in all kinds of films.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, like, look at Michael Corleone. We're going to mention The Godfather every podcast, folks.
Yes.
We're just going to do it. So, like, he starts out as being the one that's trying to not be in the mob.
He's trying to fix his family. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Or this guy, or in this case, Baby's trying to get out of this heist gang.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to get out of this thing, get far away, get his freedom, get financially stable. But the reality is the dude's a car thief, and he's...
You forget that's how he got into this mess. He's not, like, pure. He's not like, yeah, he was kidnapped and forced to become a getaway driver. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And so there is, like, the elements of... I like it, like, if you're writing this, it's fun to make audiences fall in love with a character who is flawed, or maybe even to the point of, like, their depraved character. That's fun to make an audience fall in love with that character and then go, now that you're in love, this is what's going to happen. Exactly what would happen. He's going to prison now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of fun.
Because he killed people.
He killed people.
Yeah.
He stole a bunch of cars. And now he's going to prison. Like, that's, like, logical. Isn't that logical?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But, like, at the end, you're like, this isn't fair.
Well, you're right. Morally speaking, yeah, they went the only path you go. I'm just saying there is an alternate film where they kept him above the fray, and then he would be able to go away, and morally it could have still worked. That's my
defense.
But
that's not the Western, though. The Western is, like, the flawed person that has capacity to fight evil because they got evil in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is a Western in that sense.
Yep.
So,
but yeah, man. Yeah, that's what sin does, you know? Destroys you.
Yeah.
That's the end. So that's what I would say is kind of the moral arc I saw anyway. But yeah.
Or you can't escape your past.
Can't escape your past. Good. Yeah.
Like, you can't undo the brokenness, the trauma, all those things. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that in the character of you see in not only his character, but you also see it in the couple, John Hamm's character, and I forgot the actress's name.
I do not know her name either.
Anyway,
sorry.
But you see it in them, like, they're trying to undo the past. And this is like, nope.
Yep.
You'll probably repeat the past.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. All right, man. That's it. What do you got? Final thoughts on Baby Driver. Go.
Great heist movie. You should watch, is it The Driver, which this is alluding to? So, like, there's other films out there that this has drawn influence from or has been influenced by, and you should check those out. You should, I got to watch, because of this film, got to watch this Le Samurai movie. I don't know how to say it in French, Mike. And that's a great movie.
Is it on Netflix?
It's not.
Okay.
I had to pay $4.
You love paying $4.
I do. It's highly regarded. In a 1967 film. It's not a heist film, but it's a chase film. And a lot of this film draws a lot from that film. As well as the, I forgot the guy that makes a cameo in this. I think, I forgot his name, but he did The Warriors. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Did you read any about this?
No.
Anyway, there's a movie called The Driver. He did that one with Ryan, I think Ryan O'Neal. And that's like one of the favorite movies that Tarantino loves. It. A bunch of people love it. I think it's 1977, maybe. I can't remember the date. But anyway, that's another movie to watch that got really bad reviews in the theater and has become like a cult classic. So I would say trace this movie back. Go find out the influences, and then you'll... I think it'll be helpful to the audience. I like the movie. I give it a solid B, because I don't see this as like being... This might get some technical awards. I think there's some miscast. I think there's some bad casting involved here. And I think there are third act problems. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge that. But I'd say it's a solid B. I think it's worth seeing in the theater. The first car chase alone is worth seeing.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Right out of the gate.
Yep.
Awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I mean, I think it's just impressive what Edgar Wright accomplished here with... You've got... It's pure style, writing, acting, pacing. It's just a fun ride from beginning to end. And yeah, there are third act problems. There's no denying it, but I don't think it derails the movie. I think that the final third could have been better. There's no question. But overall, it's still very good. And as far as, you know, it being a down year in film, this is currently in my top, like, I think it's like the second best movie I've seen this year, which again is a reflection.
What's
of...
What's the best one?
I don't want to live in... I don't feel at home in this world anymore on Netflix.
That.
What do you think?
I don't know yet.
What? You're still processing it, or are you...
Yeah, I'm still processing. Okay. I don't have like a... Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus I struggle with Elijah Wood.
Oh yeah, well he plays a weirdo in that one. Yeah. But that, I mean that's but that's like the peak of the year for me, and that's a B+. So I mean that tells you how this year is sort
it's
of going
rough,
so
man.
Far.
But yeah, you know what's going to save it all? Christopher Nolan. He could take $50,000 to make a feature film that you want to watch.
Dunkirk.
I know
it's coming.
I know. I got all kinds of respect for that guy.
Absolutely, we're huge Christopher Nolan fanboys over here.
Yeah,
totally. But yeah, I would give it a B+. So I think this is going to come in at number 2 on my current top 10 of 2017. But that way, I don't think it'll be in my top 10 by the end of the year. I hope not anyway. But yeah.
It's respected right now, but it is like we are in the desert and this is a glass of water, right?
This is a glass of cool water in a year of terrible films.
Can we talk? I know we want to keep going.
Yeah.
Talk about these terrible films.
I don't get it, Tim, because I honestly, like, last year I remember feeling like in January, like, already there were good movies coming out. Like, usually you have that period of like January to March where it's a desert, and I was already like, wow, this is going to be a good year. I was saying that back in January, February, and it was true all the way through the summer into the end of the year. I mean, like I think I said on this podcast before, two movies last year were straight A for me, like two in a row. That's rare on any year. Mm-hmm. And so last year was just an incredible year. And so this one, maybe that's how it works. Maybe you just have a great year and you got to have an off year. Yeah. And then next year will be great.
But the horrible movies, just for the audience, are the Transformers one.
Oh, I don't even watch those.
Nobody does.
Terrible. They do. That's the thing. You know who watches them is freaking like Japan. That's why they keep making China.
Yeah.
That's why they keep making these movies, is because the worldwide gross is outrageous. Yeah.
Oh,
anyway, there's so many terrible movies, I mean, that I haven't even seen. But even of the ones that I have seen, you're still in the B- B+ range.
We should take all the money that we're putting into making Transformers movies and make actual Transformers. That's how I feel about this.
Uh-huh.
Because that would be cool and I'd respect that. But these movies and Michael Bay and...
Or like, you know,
I
help people.
I have to deride them every time I get a chance here. But there's horrible. There's a Spider-Man one. You're saying,
yeah. That's not horrible. That's supposed to be good. I mean, you know. And then what else? What else is on my top 10 right now? There's this movie called Life that I actually liked with Jake Gyllenhaal. It's a sci-fi movie. I mean, you know,
the Mummy movie.
I didn't know. That's terrible.
See,
I didn't watch that.
These are things that are like the studios are producing and like marketing that are crap.
I know.
They're crap.
Wonder Woman was good. I enjoyed Wonder Woman. That's to my top 5. So I mean, again, nothing has been more than good, but it's been a down year. There's no question. Yeah.
Right,
but who knows? Maybe by the end of the movie, there's all kinds of hidden gems waiting. Or by the end of the year, all kinds of hidden gems waiting for us. That's what's so beautiful about the Oscar time, man. All of a sudden, these movies come out. They're like, what? Although, to be fair, last year, Whiplash and La La Land, people were talking about those movies since like January
Not
of that
Whiplash.
Year. not Whiplash. I'm sorry, La La Land Moonlight. And Moonlight. Like, people were talking about those all year, and I haven't heard about a movie that people have been like talking about. Yeah. So
I guess we gotta like pay more attention to the film fest circuit, right?
Yeah, no, I do. And there hasn't been like, you know, like a movie like that where people are like, oh, can't like this. This is the one, but we'll see. We'll see.
Hard to There's still hope. Those are good movies.
I know. I saw The Beguiled with Sofia Coppola did that, and that was just, that was really, really good. And then it just ended, and there's like no like third act to that movie at all. Yeah, it's just, it's hard. It's a rough year. Anyway. All right. Well, there you go. There you have it. The film is Baby Driver. We both, I say, go see it in the theater, right? It's a...
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to see it, see it in the theater.
Like, honestly, the context for this would be... I'm being honest here. I'm not trying to be sexist. The context that I would go see this is like, for me personally, mm-hmm. it'd be like dad's night out.
Ah.
Dude's getting out and like you're going to a late, late show. It's like 10:30 when you get yes. into this movie theater and you know, and you're hanging out with a bunch of people that are rowdy and are ready to yell at the screen. Like that's this it. Movie where people go like high five after the first chase and freaking out. Like that's this movie.
That sounds so exciting. I want to go see it again with that crowd.
I know. Don't. I love you, honey. This is not the movie we should have seen. We probably should have seen something else.
It's not a date movie, no.
But that's the kind. That's how you want to see this movie. Gals yes. could do the same thing. It doesn't matter. See whoever you want, gals yeah. or guys. But you need somebody to high five and yell at the theater, at the screen with. That's the key.
That's it.
Yeah.
I think Edgar Wright would agree with you.
Okay.
So there you go. That's it. It's playing in a theater near you. Please don't forget to leave us a friendly review so we can shout you out. That's on the podcast app or iTunes. And also, you know what? We'd love your feedback. We would love to hear from you. If you send us an email, are you ready for this email address? You can remember this. podcast@cinemafaith.com.
That's easy.
podcast@cinemafaith.com.
What is it again?
podcast@cinemafaith.com.
Oh, man.
Put podcast in the subject line so we can hear from you. We will engage with your questions, your comments right
here.
Think
we're if you think we're washed up and we've got bad opinions, yeah. we want to hear a good opinion, okay? Like if you're like, you totally missed the point of this movie,
yeah,
that's okay.
Yell at us. We will read it. We will engage with you live on air.
Yeah, and we're open to these things.
Absolutely.
I'm open to being wrong. You are too, right?
Always. Yeah. I'm frequently
wrong. Mostly wrong.
I generally think I'm wrong. Yes. I got so much flack for, what was it? Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I was ragging on that. So many people have come up to me and are like, what is your problem? That was a great movie.
It is a good movie. I know. I didn't write it down. We did have disagreements.
We did, yeah. It's okay. All right, man. That's it. So in 2 short weeks, we are back at this table reviewing Dunkirk for your listening pleasure.
I am excited. We're going to go see it. Hopefully, we'll see it together.
In IMAX.
I got a buddy I'm going to go with, yeah.
Right? Absolutely.
IMAX?
Yeah. No. Yeah. He shot it in IMAX, and it is...
Is that 70 millimeter?
Yes.
Or
he's a 70 millimeter nut. And thanks to Tarantino, you know, with whatever that one terrible movie was. They're going all out in these seven.
Eight.
Yeah, Hateful Eight. They're going all out in 70 millimeter now, so...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we got to see it together.
I'm like really looking forward to this movie.
Me too. All right, until then, keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.